وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. Today I'd like to do two things in the lecture. One is to speak about tomorrow and some of the rites and recommendations to prepare us for tomorrow. And secondly, I'm going to spend the lion's share of the time going through the story of the ninth, which has been today, which has now ended, and some of the events of the ninth and the eve of the tenth. So the day of Ashura, there are certain a'mal that are recommended. Generally speaking, we want to compose ourselves and arrange our home life as well, our with our families and whoever is around us. Set a tone for yourself of solemnity, a somber kind of a tone in your family, in your household, to the extent that you can. So there are recommendations to think of it as a funeral in your own household. Your own beloved has died, and now you're preparing for that. So you should think about how you would compose yourself, at very least on the surface. Right? So we may not be able to control the emotions directly so much on a conscious level, but we can control the outward composure in terms of how we dress, in terms of how we interact with people. Sometimes we have habits of joking very almost unconsciously in our greetings with one another and just passing comments and things like that. So to the extent that we can, try to be conscious of those so we're not making light comments and kind of humorous comments. So really kind of control all of those things. It's for a very short amount of time, but to the extent that we can do that, we can connect with the event that much more effectively. There's a recommendation to do what's called imsak. Imsak simply means to refrain specifically from food and drink. This is really only for commiseration with the plight of Imam Hussein and his family. It's not a fast. So the intention for fasting shouldn't be there. It's just you refrain from food and drink out of commiseration. And then in towards the afternoon after the time of Asr, then you can go ahead and eat with some simple food and leave off that imsak once the commemorations for Imam Hussein are over. There is a lot of back and forth, and maybe you've heard this from Sunni colleagues. So there's a recommendation that the Sunnis will commonly prepare themselves for to fast on this day and to celebrate the day, and it's a day of celebration to celebrate the exodus of Moses from the grasp of Pharaoh and the death of Pharaoh as well. And that the Prophet encountered the Jews in his last year in Medina and saw that they were fasting on this day, which probably corresponded to Yom Kippur. And because of that, then he said, well, if they're fasting it, we should fast too. And there should be a celebration for the Muslims too, because he's our Prophet more than he's their Prophet. And so the story goes then that he started to fast from that, basically that last month of his life. Right, because the narration says the last Muharram. Actually, that's one of the problems with that story. So if you think about it, the Prophet died in Safar, which is the second month of the calendar. Muharram's the first, right? So if he experienced this in the last Muharram of his lifetime, which is what the Sunni traditions say, then he wouldn't even live to the next Muharram. So he never would have actually fasted. At most, you'd have a recommendation that says, if I lived another year, I would fast. Another problem with the story is that it's kind of unlikely that 10 years into being in Medina, interacting with the Jews, and in fact, at that point, having kicked out all the Jews or killed them, right? Because the Banu Qurayza, the Banu Qaynuqa first were exiled. The Banu Nadir, Banu Qurayza, I don't remember which one was executed, all the men were executed, and the others were all excommunicated to Khaybar and to the north. So Medina was emptied of at least any significant Jewish population. And at that point, at the end of the Prophet's life, to have all of a sudden seen a celebration of a commemoration of the Jewish people in Medina, it's quite unlikely at that level too. All those things aside though, even the best case scenario, if that hadith were true, and that scenario were true, the event of Karbala has taken place on the same day, right? The significance of this day and the sadness of this day should, for any Muslim, overpower any previous thing, right? Even if that's the practice of the Prophet. We have other examples of this where something was there at the time of the Prophet, but then something else happened on that day and it takes on different significance because of some other event. That's not abandoning the Sunnah of the Prophet, even if it were a Sunnah, even if we established that was something that he wanted to practice or did in fact practice. Beyond that, we also have documented evidence that this was one of the tactics that the Umayyads used to cover their tracks, that they wanted to spin Hussein's story as a story of rebellion against the rightful government. They used terms like shaqqu asal muslimin, as though Imam Hussein was causing fitna, he was causing social unrest, he was causing upheaval, unnecessary death, and these kinds of things, painting him as the troublemaker, right? And so one of the tactics that they had was to make this day a day of celebration. In the days ahead, as you commemorate kind of the aftermath of Karbala and what happened after they were killed, after the family was killed and the women are taken to Kufa first and then to Damascus, the reports that talk about their entrance into Damascus say that by decree of Yazid, Damascus had been decked out in ways that people, travelers and people who were there at the time, they said that they've never seen a city decked out like that. It was a day of celebration. There's one report that this person comes into Damascus on that day and he sees the celebration and he's kind of confused. He says, you know, what Eid is this today? Is this some other Eid that I didn't know about before besides Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Adha? And they say, no, it's the day that, you know, we're celebrating the entrance of these captives. There are these rebels who were destroyed by Amir al-Mu'mineen at Yazid, and we're celebrating their defeat. So this is a day of celebration. We have reference to it in Ziyarat Ashura as well. Yawm tabarrakat bihi banu Umayya. I'm trying to think of the phrase anyway. So tabarrakat bihi banu Umayya wa ibn Akilat al-Akbad. This is a day that it was a Mubarak day for them. Right, it was a blessed day for them, a day of celebration for them. So whether or not this, you know, fasting at the time of the Prophet was there, what we do know is this was the sentiment that we now have that's reflected in some segments of the Sunni population. I'll say some because this is primarily a Salafi tactic that has slowly crept into Sunni populations as a whole. This is a common theme again. Sunnis who have a little bit more awareness and have kind of looked at the history of their own way of thinking and their own presence in the world, they'll also realize that how many of the things that are now very common in American Sunniism have only crept in the last couple of decades as Salafi Islam and Wahhabi Islam has been exported from Saudi Arabia into America and into the West. They've had an influence on the Sunni world as well that is something that Sunnis themselves are sensitive to. Those who have longer lives or have longer memories, they realize that something has changed for the worse. All those things that we see from ISIS, in an extreme, we see lesser elements of that in creeping into Sunni Islam. Whereas from my parents' generation, it was very common to have Sunnis in India, in Hyderabad, right, participate in majalis and in Ashura commemorations and these kinds of things, and they didn't really see it as so much of a divisive thing. Right now we see that it has become a divisive thing in our generation, which doesn't make sense for so many other reasons, but if you understand the influence of Salafi Islam on Sunnis, then it does make sense. Right? And so this is the celebratory nature of Ashura is something that no Muslim should stand for. If you want to want to fast based on that tradition that you've accepted, right? As simply an act of worship, we do actually, admittedly, we do have traditions even from the Ahlul Bayt that speak about fasting on the day of Ashura, and we have some that prohibit fasting. And so there's a discussion of legitimate discussion amongst the Shia whether or not it's good to fast, mustahab to fast, makruh to fast, even haram to fast. And you'll find historically proponents of all those different opinions. None of them would accept that it's a fast for celebration, of course. Right? So the fasting thing we can set aside and leave that up to, it's a practical matter. But the celebratory nature of Ashura is something that all Muslims who have any sort of attachment to the Prophet or the Ahlul Bayt should separate themselves from and disavow. All right. Recite one salawat. So tomorrow morning, inshallah, we'll come together, whoever can make it, and if you can't come here, then go wherever you can go. But again, spend some time. One of the advantages of doing things as a group is that oftentimes it adds structure to our acts of worship and acts of devotion that we would never be able to achieve on our own. It's rare that you can sit at home in the privacy of your own home and create an atmosphere for yourself of devotion and these kinds of things. That takes a lot of work, a lot of self-control and those sorts of things. That's one of the reasons why we're encouraged to have jama'ah prayer and then all these other congregational things, even reading du'as together and these kinds of practices that we have. There's a lot of benefit in doing it as a group. So we're going to read through Ziyarat Ashura, inshallah, with all the 100 la'an and the 100 salawat. And inshallah, in the Q&A, if there's some question about the la'an as well, that's something that it's worthy of speaking of a little bit to understand what is it that we're then going to recite so many times. And really, Ziyarat Ashura is all about affirmation of correct belief and alignment with those who are with God and godly things and godly people, and disavowal of all evil, tawalli and tabarri. And so la'an plays a big role in that, and we should understand that this is an act of worship, and we're trying to get closer to Allah partly by directly connecting with Him, but also just as importantly disavowing and separating ourselves from those things that are ungodly. Both are extremely important, and both are essential components for getting closer to Allah. One cannot be there without the other to have a complete understanding and a complete kind of a conception of the Islamic message. All right. There are other recommendations that we leave off worldly activities for this day as well, on the day of Ashura. So to the extent that you can, if you've already planned for it, great. If you haven't, if you can plan for it, to stay away from work, right? Again, this is a time, we have historical documentation, this is a time when the Umayyads would recommend. Think of Christmas season, for instance, and how you're buying things, you're buying gifts, you're kind of buying special food and these kinds of things. That same kind of atmosphere of preparation for a holiday was there for Ashura. And so to counter that attitude and atmosphere, the Ahlul Bayt have told us to avoid any sort of profitable work on this day, right? And to avoid buying things and procuring things. Don't go shopping, don't buy your groceries, don't buy new clothes. So anything that you, any kind of earning and any kind of gain that you have on this day, they say there's no barakah in it, there's no blessing in it. You'll have some, the worldly effect of it, but there's no blessing in those kinds of things on this day. Yeah, so to the extent that you can. Even, we have some scholars, Allama Tabatabai, one of his reputations was that he was an ardent, kind of a very studious person throughout his life, and that one of the things he would study throughout the calendar year, never taking a break on any day except for Ashura. Right, so this is one day that even someone like that who would insist on continuing to work and study on a regular basis on Ashura, at least he would leave off for the sake of Imam Hussein. So those are some recommendations and some prohibitions and guidelines for the day of Ashura. Before I read the story from the Maqtal, I want to partly thank Naqi in particular. If everyone could recite one salawat for Naqi Haider. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. And not only him, I know he has, there are other people who are also working with him, Khalid Latif and his team, Sister Amira, those who have made the space available, made this program available, and worked probably throughout the year to make these 10 days happen. Right? They deserve our gratitude, and they've earned, inshallah, reward from Allah as well, and blessing from Allah. Also, just I realize what you have. I see faces come and go, and some of you are constant, but you have a very special place here, and the activity is very special, and from where I sit, this is the future of Ashura and Muharram commemorations in America. Things happening in English, things happening in experimental ways that are getting better and better and more comfortable and more appropriate and easy to connect with. Right? This is something that's very special, and it's here in this space, but hopefully it doesn't have to stay here and only be limited to here. I know it's kind of a transient community. Some are students who will be going back to their own places, and some people work here for some years, then they end up going back to wherever they came from. So take whatever you get. While you're here, work for the community and build this community, but then also gain experience and gain insight into how you can reproduce something like this and take these ideas and the inspiration and do it wherever you are. Right, again, this is the face of Shi'ism in the next generation. And so if you can take these kinds of ideas and this inspiration and recreate it, then you're part of that process of making Islam that much more relevant to our lives in America. Recite with Salawat. So I'm going to be reading from a book called Mawsu'at Karbala. It's a two-volume encyclopedia of Karbala where the author has taken from all different historical and devotional sources and pieced the whole story together and in a very beautiful and effective way. So I've translated some parts of it. I'm going to read some of the Arabic and then I'll translate on the fly for some parts of it as well. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. On the 7th of Muharram, the following message was sent by Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad to the commander of the Kufan army, Umar ibn Sa'd. Bar Hussein and his companions from the river, so they do not taste a drop of it, just as he did with the pure, the pious, the poor commander of the faithful, Uthman ibn Affan. Wassalam. These are all fallacies that have been propagated, fed to people as ways to get them angry at the Ahlul Bayt, as though Imam Hussein had something to do with killing Uthman, when the reality of it that was known to everyone was actually he and Imam Hassan were the ones who, on the command of Imam Ali, took water to Uthman to break the blockade and make sure he had enough to support himself. So they're actually the ones helping Uthman, and now Muawiyah, Yazid, and the Umayyad propaganda machine, they're spreading these rumors to get people angry for the death of Uthman by spreading these kinds of lies. When this message reached Umar ibn Sa'd, he gave Amr ibn al-Hajjaj command of 500 troops to bar Imam al-Hussein's camp from the water of the Euphrates. When the Kufan troops had taken their positions, a soldier from among them named Abdullah ibn al-Hussein with a Sa'd al-Azdi yelled out to Imam Hussein's camp, saying, "Ya Hussein, do you see this water? It looks blue like the sky. By God, you shall not taste a drop of it, and you shall die of thirst." Amr ibn al-Hajjaj yelled out, "O Hussein, dogs are free to wallow in this water. The pigs and donkeys of Kufa are free to drink from it, as are the wolves. But you shall not drink a drop of it, by God, until you taste the boiling water of hellfire." When the dearth of water became hard on his camp, Imam al-Hussein dug a well behind the women's tent until fresh water gushed forth. He and his camp drank to their fill and filled their water skins. Upon hearing news of this well, Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad wrote the following letter to Umar ibn Sa'd. "It has come to my attention that Hussein is digging wells and obtaining water so that he and his companions can drink. So listen to me. As soon as this letter reaches you, prevent them from digging wells to the utmost of your ability. Be severe with them and do not allow them to taste a drop. Do to them as they did to Uthman the Pure." Wassalam. On the morning of the 9th, when Hussein awoke, he called the Adhan, the Iqama, and prayed with his companions. When he was done, he called for the armor of his grandfather, the Messenger of God, to be brought. He wrapped the messenger's turban, called As-Sahab, around his head, and he strapped Dhul-Fiqar, his father's sword, to his waist. Then he rode out to the Kufan host and said, "O people, You should realize that this is a fleeting and fading world. It shifts under its denizens from one moment to the next. O people, you have come to know the law of Islam. You have read the Quran. You know that Muhammad was the messenger of God who is king and judge. Nonetheless, you leap at the opportunity to wrongfully kill his son. Imam Hussein called upon one of his men named Anas ibn Kahil. He told him, "Go to these people and remind them about God and his messenger. Perhaps they will consider fighting us. They will reconsider fighting us. Alas, I know they will not reconsider, but I will have a proof against them on the day of resurrection." This is something that we see repeated. The Imam would go out repeatedly and give sermon after sermon to the Kufans. This is still on the 9th. On the 10th also we'll see several sermons that the Imam himself delivers to the Kufans. But importantly, he also sends out certain prominent companions of his. We'll see the companion, Burayr, whose maqtal I read yesterday, he goes out, and Habib ibn Muzahir, and Zuhayr ibn al-Qayn, who had been an Uthmani person before the days of Karbala, right? Until basically the eve of Karbala, he was not allied with the Ahlul Bayt at all. But he was a righteous person and a very prominent person. And so Imam Hussein sends these kinds of individuals out to do itmam al-hujjah to the Kufans, to let them know what we stand for, why you're wrong, and to try to convince anyone they could convince. And if not convinced, then at least do itmam al-hujjah, so he seals his case against them. They have no excuse before Allah to say, "We didn't know, we weren't sure," and these kinds of things. Everything was completely plain to them. If they remained on the side of the Kufans, they were fully at fault. There's no excuse left for them. And you see it works. There, in addition, we know about Hur, right? Hur is only one. There are at least 20 to 30 people that are recorded that also crossed over. Right, so it was effective, and those who had good hearts, they were able to find their way. Anas proceeded and entered the presence of Umar ibn Sa'd, who was seated. Anas did not say salam to him. Umar objected, "Dear Kahli, what has prevented you from saying salam to me? Am I not a believer and a Muslim? By God, I am not an unbeliever, I'm not a kafir, for I believe in God and his messenger," Umar ibn Sa'd says. Anas replied, "How can you claim to believe in God and his messenger when you intend to murder his son, his family, and those who aid him?" Umar cast down his gaze and said, "I know that the one who murders them will undoubtedly go to hell, but I must carry out the orders of my commander, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad." Anas returned to Hussein and gave him a full report. Sometime later, in the camp of Hussein, they heard the clamor of hoofbeats approaching. Hussein told his brother Abbas, "Ride out and meet them. Ask them why they have come and what they want." Abbas immediately set out with 20 cavalry, including Zuhayr ibn al-Qayn and Habib ibn al-Muzahir. They asked them what they wanted, and they replied, "Our commander's ultimatum has come. We are to force you to submit to him or to fight you." Abbas returned and reported to Imam al-Hussein. Imam Hussein tells Abbas, "ارجع يا أخي إلى القوم فإن استطعت أن تصرفهم وتدفعهم عنا باقي هذا اليوم فافعل." He tells Abbas to go back to them and tell them, "If you can, see if you can buy us another day. Tell them for the rest of the day of the ninth, this day that we've just ended, for the rest of the ninth, leave us alone. لَعَلَّنَا نُصَلِّي لِرَبِّنَا لَيْلَتَنَا هَذِهِ وَنَدْعُوَ اللَّهَ وَنَسْتَعِينُهُ وَنَسْتَنصِرُهُ عَلَىٰ هَؤُلَاءِ الْقَوْمِ. We'd like to spend the night in prayer and in supplication and in recitation of the Qur'an to seek Allah's help. فَأَقْبَلَ الْعَبَّاسُ إِلَى الْقَوْمِ وَهُمْ وُقُوفٌ فَقَالَ لَهُمْ. So Abbas goes back with his 20 cavalry to the enemy soldiers who are also standing there. And he tells them, "يا هؤلاء إن أبا عبد الله يسألكم الانصراف عنه باقي يومكم هذا حتى ينظر في هذا الأمر." He says that Abu Abdullah al-Hussein is asking you, is requesting that you leave us alone for the rest of this day, so that he can think about the options and these kinds of things. He doesn't communicate that he wants to pray and these kinds of things. He says so he can contemplate the options. ثُمَّ نَلْقَاكُمْ بِهِ غَدًا إِنْشَاءَ اللَّهِ. And then tomorrow we can meet and we can finalize whatever the arrangements are or whatever has to happen. فَأَخْبَرَ الْقَوْمُ أَمِيرَهُمْ عُمَرَ بْنَ سَعَدْ فَقَالَ لِأَصْحَابِهِ مَا تَرَوْنَ. So these 20 go back to Umar ibn Sa'd and communicate Hussein's demand. He, in turn, Umar ibn Sa'd turns to his companions and says, what do you think? What do you advise that I should do? قَالُوا لَهُ أَنْتَ الْأَمِيرُ. They say, it's your choice, you're the commander, you make the decision. فَقَالَ لَهُ عَمْرُ بْنُ الْحَجَّاجِ. Right, this commander of Umar ibn Sa'd, he tells him, this is the person who was in charge of blocking the family from the water and these kinds of things. Even he has this heart. He says, Subhanallah al-Azim, Wallahi law kana ha'ula'i min at-Turki aw ad-Daylam, thumma sa'aluna hadhihi al-layla, laqad kana yanbaghi an tujibuhum ila thalik. He said, this is amazing. If they had been Turk and Daylam at that time were kuffar, they're some of the staunch enemies of the Muslim Ummah at that time. So they're used as kind of the examples for the most evil of people. So it's not a racial slur. It's these people were actually enemies at that time. So they're used as a in that way. So he says, if instead of Hussein, it had been the Turk and Daylamites on the other side fighting us, kuffar fighting us, and then they made such a request, we'd give them that, we'd grant them that. We'd say, fine, not today, we'll fight tomorrow. We'll give you one day of respite. But now it's Hussein who's asking. وَهُمْ عَلُ الرَّسُولِ فَقَالَ إِبْنُ سَعْدِ أَخْبِرُوهُمْ أَنَّا أَجَّلْنَاهُمْ بَاقِيَ يَوْمِنَا هَذَا إِلَى الْغَدْ فَإِنْ اسْتَسْلَمُوا وَنَزَلُوا عَلَى الْحُكْمِ وَجَّهْنَا بِهِمْ إِلَى الْأَمِيرِ عُبَيْدِ اللَّهِ وَإِنْ أَبَوْا نَاجَزْنَاهُمْ. So Umar also, that argument sits with him and he says, fine, go and tell them that we'll give them respite for the rest of the day of the ninth, and then tomorrow we'll see if they've submitted, then we'll take them to Ubaidullah peaceably, and if they reject, then we'll fight. فَانْصَرَفَ الْفَرِيقَانِ وَعَادَ كُلٌّ إِلَى مُعَسْكَرِهِ. So each of those two 20 cavalry parties, they return back to their camps, and they have the rest of the day as a respite until the 10th.
وَجَمَعَ الْحُسَيْنُ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامُ أَصْحَابَهُ بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ ثُمَّ حَمِدَ اللَّهَ وَأَثْنَى عَلَيْهِ وَقَالَ اللَّهُمَّ لَكَ الْحَمْدُ عَلَى مَا عَلَّمْتَنَا مِنَ الْقُرْآنِ.
So the evening of the ninth, Imam Hussein gathers all of his companions and his Ahlul Bayt in his camp, and he addresses them as follows. He praises Allah and he thanks Allah for having taught us the Quran. وَفَقَّهْتَنَا فِي الدِّينِ وَأَكْرَمْتَنَا بِهِ مِنْ قَرَابَةِ رَسُولِكَ مُحَمَّدٍ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ وَسَلَّمَ وَجَعَلْتَ لَنَا أَسْمَاعًا وَأَبْصَارًا وَأَفْئِدَةً فَجَعَلْنَا مِنَ الشَّاكِرِينَ.
He praises Allah for having taught us the Quran, taught us the deen, ennobled us, the Ahlul Bayt, for having this connection with the noble Prophet. And then you've given us as people our senses, our ears, and our faculty of sight and hearts that can think. So we thank you for all of this.
أَمَّا بَعْد فَإِنِّي لَا أَعْلَمُ أَصْحَابًا أَصْلَحَ مِنْكُمْ وَلَا أَعْلَمُ أَهْلَ بَيْتٍ أَبَرَّ وَلَا أَوْصَلَ وَلَا أَفْضَلَ مِنْ أَهْلِ بَيْتِ.
He turns to his companions and he says that I know of no companions that anyone has ever had like these companions of mine. And no Ahlul Bayt, no family, no relatives who are better and more connected and more virtuous than my Ahlul Bayt.
جَزَاكُمُ اللَّهُ جَمِيعًا عَنِّي خَيْرًا إِنَّ هَؤُلَاءِ الْقَوْمِ مَا يَطْلُبُونَ أَحَدًا غَيْرِي وَلَوْ قَدْ أَصَابُونِي وَقَدَرُوا عَلَى قَتْلِي لَمَا طَلَبُوكُمْ أَبَدًا.
He tells them that this enemy host, their only interest is me. If they are able to get to me and have me in their custody, then they won't seek out any of you.
وَهَذَا اللَّيْلِ قَدْ غَشِيَكُمْ.
The night's dark.
فَقُومُوا وَاتَّخِذُوهُ جَمَلًا.
So I want all of you to rise and use the night as your camel. In the cover of night, I want all of you to go and find a way to escape. All they want is me.
Then he says, وَلْيَأْخُذْ كُلُّ رَجُلٍ مِّنْكُمْ بِيَدِ رَجُلٍ مِّنْ إِخْوَتِي.
Each of you, my companions, please take the hand of one of my family members and take him with you and help him to escape also.
وَتَفَرَّقُوا فِي سَوَادِ هَذَا اللَّيْلِ.
Go and disperse into the blackness of the night.
وَذَرُونِي وَهَؤُلَاءِ الْقَوْمِ.
And leave me alone with this host.
فَتَكَلَّمَ إِخْوَةُ الْحُسَيْنِ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ وَالْجَمِيعُ أَهْلِ بَيْتِهِ وَقَالُوا.
Turn by turn, his companions and the Ahlul Bayt, they speak up, Ya ibn Rasulullah, فَمَاذَا تَقُولُ النَّاسُ وَمَاذَا نَقُولُ لَهُمْ If we are to leave, if we abandon you now, what will people say about us and what answer will we give to them? إِنَّا تَرَكْنَا شَيْخَنَا وَسَيِّدَنَا وَابْنَ بِنْتِ نَبِيِّنَا مُحَمَّدٍ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ وَلَمْ نَرْمِ مَعَهُ بِالسَّهْمِ وَلَمْ نَطْعَنْ بِرُمْحِ وَلَمْ نَضْرِبْ بِسَيْفِ That we abandoned our leader and our master, the son of the daughter of the Messenger of Allah, without even shooting a single arrow or striking with a single sword or spear. لا والله يا ابن رسول الله لا نفارقك أبدا They say, by God, we shall not ever part from you and ever abandon you. وَلَكِنَّا نَفْدِيكَ بِأَنفُسِنَا وَنُقْتَلُ بَيْنَ يَدَيْكَ وَنَرِدُ مَوْرِدَكَ We will sacrifice ourselves for you. We will fight and be killed before you, and we will, inshallah, enter in whatever blessing and whatever place you enter. فَقَبَّحَ اللَّهُ الْعَيْشَ مِنْ بَعْدِكَ May Allah never allow us to live after you. ثم تكلم مسلم بن عوسجة الأسدي فقال يا ابن رسول الله أنحن نخليك هكذا وننصرف عنك Muslim ibn Awsajah says, Son of God's Messenger, is it possible for us to abandon you and leave you? وقد أحاط بك هؤلاء الأعداء Just at the time when your enemies have encircled you? لا والله لا يران الله وأنا أفعل ذلك أبدا May Allah never see me do such a thing. حتى أكسر في صدورهم رمحي وأضرب فيهم بسيفي ما ثبت قائمه بيدي May Allah never see me abandon you in all of this until I can ram my spear into their chests and strike them down with my sword as long as the hilt of my sword stays in my hand. ولو لم يكن لي سلاح أقاتلهم به لقذفتهم بالحجارة And if my weapons all fail me, then I'll pick up stones and I'll start stoning them. وَلَمْ أُفَارِقْكَ حَتَّى أَمُوتَ بَيْنَ يَدَيْكَ But in no case will I ever abandon you until I die. ثُمَّ تَكَلَّمَ السَّعِيدُ بْنُ عَبْدِ اللَّهِ الْحَنَفِي Another companion speaks up and says, لَا وَاللَّهِ يَبْنَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ لَا نُخَلِّيكَ أَبَدًا We'll never abandon you. حَتَّى يَعْلَمَ اللَّهُ تَبَارَكَ وَتَعَالَى أَنَّ حَفِظْنَا فِيكَ غَيْبَةَ رَسُولِهِ Until Allah sees and knows that we have done our duty in the absence of the Prophet, that we've protected his legacy and guarded his legacy, that is you. وَوَاللَّهِ لَوْ عَلِمْتُ أَنِّي أُقْتَلْ ثُمَّ أُحْيَا ثُمَّ أُحْرَقُ حَيًّا يُفْعَلُ بِذَلِكَ سَبْعِينَ مَرَّةً لَمَا فَارَقْتُكَ أَبَدًا حَتَّى أَلْقَى حِمَامِي مِنْ دُونِكَ He says, if I knew that I would be killed and then raised again and then burned alive and this was done to me 70 times, I would still never abandon you until I meet my death in defense of you. وَكَيْفَ لَا أَفْعَلُ ذَلِكَ وَإِنَّمَا هِيَ قَتْلَةٌ وَاحِدَةٌ How could I do any less when it's just one simple death? ثُمَّ أَنَالُ الْكَرَامَةَ الَّتِي لَنْ قِضَاءَ لَهَا أَبَدًا And after that one simple death, there's eternal ennoblement in God's presence. Some others said, أَنفُسُنَا لَكَ الْفِدَاءُ وَنَقِيكَ بِأَيْدِينَا وَوُجُوهِنَا وَصُدُورِنَا فَإِذَا نَحْنُ قُتِلْنَا بَيْنَ يَدَيْكَ نَكُونُ قَدْ وَفَّيْنَا وَقَضَيْنَا مَا عَلَيْنَا That we will sacrifice ourselves for you. And when we are dead, then we will have finally fulfilled our promises and fulfilled our oaths to you. So when Imam Hussein sees that they are all sincere, he's tested them, he gave them an out. Nobody took it. They've reaffirmed their allegiance to him when he's finally tested them and now he knows that they're all here for the right reasons and they're all sincere. أَوْقَفَهُمْ عَلَى غَامِضِ الْقَضَاءِ So similar to how Imam Ali had told Mitham Tammar and some of those other people how they would die, he opens up certain doors, certain veils for his companions as well and allows them to know some of the secrets and some of the things that are going to happen to them. He says, إِنِّي غَدًا أُقْتَلْ وَكُلُّكُمْ تُقْتَلُونَ مَعِي I will tomorrow be killed. And all of you will be killed with me. وَلَا يَبْقَى مِنْكُمْ أَحَدٍ Not a single one of you will be left. حَتَّى الْقَاسِمِ وَعَبْدِ اللَّهِ الرَّضِيعِ even my nephew Qasim and my baby son Abdullah al-Radi'. Illa waladi Aliyun Zainul Abidin. The only one that will be spared is my son Ali Zainul Abidin. لِأَنَّ اللَّهَ لَمْ يَقْطَعْ نَسْلِي مِنْهُ. Allah is not going to cut my lineage through him. وَهُوَ أَبُو أَئِمَّةٍ ثَمَانِيَةٍ. He is the father of 8 imams to come. فَقَالُوا بِأَجْمَعِهِمْ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ الَّذِي أَكْرَمَنَا بِنَصْرِكَ وَشَرَّفَنَا بِالْقَتْلِ مَعَكَ. All the companions and all the Ahlul Bayt, they resoundedly say praises for Allah, who has ennobled us by allowing us to defend you, and has ennobled us by allowing us to be killed before you. أَوَلَا نَرْضَى أَن نَكُونَ مَعَكَ فِي دَرَجَتِكَ يَبْنَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ. Is this not enough of an honor that we should be honor of being at your station in Allah's eyes? ثُمَّ دَعَى وَقَالَ لَهُمْ إِرْفَعُوا رُؤُوسَكُمْ وَانْظُرُوا فَجَعَلُوا يَنْظُرُونَ إِلَى مَوَاضِعِهِمْ وَمَنَازِلِهِمْ مِنَ الْجَنَّةِ. So he opens up certain veils for them again. He tells them all to look up, and he's able to present to them and show them their places in paradise. وَهُوَ يَقُولُ لَهُمْ هَذَا مَنْزِلُكَ يَا فُلَانَ وَهَذَا قَصْرُكَ يَا فُلَانَ وَهَذِهِ زَوْجَتُكَ يَا فُلَانَ. He tells one person, this is your station in paradise. Here is the palace that Allah has made for you, and this is the hur'een that He's prepared for you. فَكَانَ الرَّجُلُ يَسْتَقْبِلُ الرِّمَاحَ وَالسُّيُوفَ بِصَدْرِهِ وَوَجْهُ لِيَصِلَ إِلَى مَنْزِلِهِ مِنَ الْجَنَّةِ. So as the companions on the next day would fight, they would be fighting with their swords and their spears and facing these things, but their hearts and their minds were on their stations in paradise that they were working towards.
وَيُرْوَى أَنَّ الْحُسَيْنَ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ فِي آخِرِ خُطْبَتِهِ قَالَ أَصْحَابِي بَنِي عَمُومَتِي أَهْلَ بَيْتِي أَلَا وَمَنْ كَانَ فِي رَحْلِهِ إِمْرَأَةٌ فَلْيَبْعَثْ بِهَا إِلَى أَهْلِهَا.
Also in the same gathering, another tradition tells us that he told all of his companions and families, he tells them all, he says, any of you who have women with them, your wives are here, your daughters are here, I want you to send your wives back to their families, send them back to their tribes, and let them be safe.
فَإِنَّ نِسَائِي تُسْبَى وَأَخَافُ عَلَى نِسَائِكُمْ السَّبِيَ.
He says that the women of my family are all going to be captured, but I'm afraid that your women will also be captured.
فَقَامَ مِنْ بَيْنِهِمْ عَلِيُّ بْنُ مُظَاهِرَ الْأَسَدِي وَأَقْبَلَ إِلَى خَيْمَتِهِ.
So the brother of Habib ibn Mudahir, Ali ibn Mudahir, he stands up and he goes to his tent. When he goes there, his wife is there and she is smiling. So he's a little bit puzzled by her smile. And then he tells her what Imam Hussein has just told him to tell her, that I want you to go and leave and go back to your family, your tribe, and I want you to leave the battlefield of Karbala.
فَقَالَتْ لِمَ يَبْنَ مُظَاهِرٍ.
She asked, why this all of a sudden?
هَلْ فَعَلْتُ مَعَكَ مَكْرُوًا. Have I done something to displease you that you want to divorce me, you want to abandon me now?
قَالَ حَاشَ لِلَّهِ. No, absolutely not.
وَلَكِنْ أَمَا سَمِعْتِ غَرِيبَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ خَطَبَنَا فِي هَذِي السَّاعَةِ.
Didn't you just hear what Imam Hussein said? She says, I heard most of what he said, but he said something at the end that I didn't hear properly. So he tells her that he's told us to tell you to go back to your families and escape from the battlefield.
فَلَمَّا سَمِعَتِ الْحُرَّةُ ذَلِكَ نَطَحَتْ رَأْسَهَا بِعَمُودِ الْخَيْمَةِ.
When Ali ibn Mudahir's wife hears this, she is stunned. It says that she maybe fainted or whatever, and she hit her head against one of the tent poles and said, مَا أَنصَفْتَنِي يَبْنَ مُظَاهِرٍ. You have not treated me fairly by telling me to do this, she says.
أَيَسُرُّكَ أَنَّ زَيْنَبْ يُسْلَبُ إِزَارُهَا وَأَنَا أَتَزَيَّنُ بِإِزَارِي.
Is it okay with you that Zainab should be treated in this way, but I should be able to continue and live as a proper woman with my clothes on, and her clothes should be stripped off?
أَمْ يَسُرُّكَ أَنَّ سَكِينَةَ يُسْلَبُ قُرْطَاهَا وَأَنَا أَتَزَيَّنُ بِقُرْطَي.
That Sakina, her earrings and these things should be stripped off, and I should have my own?
لا كان ذلك أبدا.
I mean, Allah never see anything like that ever happen.
بل أنتم تواسون الرجال ونحن نواسي النساء.
You take care of the men from the Ahlul Bayt, and we'll take care of the women from the Ahlul Bayt.
ثم إن الحسين خرج ليلا وحده ليختبر الثنايا والعقبات وإذا بنافع ابن هلال خلفه.
So Imam Hussein in the night, he goes and he makes his circuits around the tents to look out for any weak spots or any surprise attacks and these kinds of things. Nafi ibn Hilal, one of his companions, comes behind him. فَقَالَ لَهُ الْحُسَيْنِ مَنَ الرَّجُلِ. He says, who's that? So Nafi says, جُعَلْتُ فِدَاكْ يَبْنَ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ أَنَا نَافِعْ. So Hussein says, مَا أَخْرَجَكَ فِي هَذَا اللَّيْلِ يَا نَافِعْ. What's brought you out in the darkness of night? He says, سَيِّدِي أَزْعَجَنِي خُرُوجُكَ لَيْلًا إِلَى جِهَةِ هَذَا الْبَاغِي. I was afraid for your safety. I saw you come out towards the enemy and I was afraid that they might do something, so I've come to defend you.
قال عليه السلام خرجت أتفقد هذه التليعات مخافة أن تكون مكمنا لهجوم الخيل على مخيمنا.
So I've come out to make sure that there are no hideouts where people or the enemy is hiding out, and then they're going to launch an attack from there.
ثم إنه رجع وهو قابض على يسار نافع.
Imam Hussein takes Nafi's hand. وهو يقول
he والله وعد وعد لا خلف فيه. ثم قال لنافع ألا تسلك بين هذين الجبلين وانجو بنفسك.
So Imam Hussein again gives an out to Nafi. He says, Nafi, look at those two mountains there. There's a pass that goes through. I want you to go. Right, take off. You go through the pass and keep going. Don't look back.
He says, سيدي إذن ثكلت نافع عن أمه.
May my mother be bereaved.
إن سيفي بألف وفرسي بمثلي فوالله الذي من علي بك في هذا المكان لن أفارقك أبا عبد الله حتى يكل عن فري وجاري.
He says, absolutely not, I'll never do this. May my sword be yours, my horse be yours. I'll never abandon you until I fight. If I have to lose my head, lose my life, that's not a problem.
ثم إن الحسين فارق نافعا ودخل خيمة أخته زينب.
So Imam Hussein, he comes back from his scouting mission around the camp, and he comes back to Zainab's tent.
فوضعت له متكئا وجلس يحدثها سرا.
Imam Hussein, she puts a pillow down for him to rest. He puts his head down, takes a rest, and begins to speak with her.
ونافع واقف ينتظر خروج الحسين.
نافع is sitting outside the tent waiting for Imam Hussein to come out again so he can escort him back to wherever he was supposed to go.
So Zainab, she whispers to Imam Hussein and talks to him and says, هل استعلمت من أصحابك نياتهم.
Have you sufficiently vetted your companions? Are you sure they're going to stand with you tomorrow? Who knows, like when things get tough, they might abandon you like so many abandoned your father and your brother before. So he says, no, I've tested them. I've tested them in so many ways, and I'm confident now that these particular people who have stayed behind, they are with me till the end.
وجاء الليل فبات الحسين عليه السلام وأصحابه الليل كله يصلون ويستغفرون ويدعون ويتضرعون.
The night passed, and Imam Hussein and his companions, the Ahlul Bayt, they spend the entire night praying and seeking forgiveness from Allah and supplicating.
وَبَاتُوا وَلَهُمْ دَوِيٌّ كَدَوِيٍّ النَّحْلِ.
To the observer, it sounded like it was a beehive humming and buzzing with the sounds of their recitation and their prayers.
مَا بَيْنَ رَاكِعٍ وَسَاجِدٍ وَقَائِمٍ وَقَاعِدٍ. فَتَأَثَّرَ بِهَذَا الْجَوِّ الْوَاقِعِي نَفَرٌ مِنَ الْجَيْشِ الْأُمَوِي.
So several people, quite a few people from the enemy side, as they saw all of this and they heard all of this, they were also affected.
من ذوي الضمائر الحية التي كانت عليها غشاوة ضلال فانجلت بهذا الجو المشحون إيمانا وتقا وهدى.
So the report says that 32 people, they came over during the night and joined Imam Hussein's forces in this way.
وجاء شمر بن ذي الجوشن في نصف الليل يتجسس ومعه جماعة من أصحابه.
In the night, just like Imam Hussein was scouting around, Shimr also is one of the commanders of Umar ibn Sa'd's army. He comes out with a
a group of soldiers, and they also are scouting around to see how the battle will play out the next day.
حتى قارب مُعَسْكَرَ الحسين فَسَمِعَهُ يَتْلُو قَوْلَهُ تَعَالَى.
So Shamri actually comes close enough to be able to hear the recitation, and he hears Imam Hussein recite,
وَلَا يَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا أَنَّمَا نُمْلِي لَهُمْ خَيْرٌ لِأَنفُسِهِمْ إِنَّمَا نُمْلِي لَهُمْ لِيَزْدَادُوا إِثْمًا وَلَهُمْ عَذَابٌ مُهِينٌ مَا كَانَ اللَّهُ لِيَذَرَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ عَلَى مَا أَنْتُمْ عَلَيْهِ حَتَّى يَمِيزَ الْخَبِيثَ مِنَ الطَّيِّبِ فصاح رجل من أصحاب شمر نحن ورب الكعبة الطيبون وأنتم الخبيثون.
When he hears this verse about the righteous and the filthy, this person from Shemr's army says that we by God are the طيبون, the righteous and the good, and you, Hussein and companions of Hussein, you are the filth.
وقد ميزنا الله منكم.
And Allah, we thank God that He has distinguished and differentiated between us and you to make it clear that we are the righteous and you are the evil.
فقطع برير بن خضير الهمداني صلاته ثم نادى يا فاسق يا فاجر يا عدو الله يا ابن البوال على عقبي أمثلك يكون من الطيبين والحسين بن رسول الله من الخبيثين.
So Burair speaks up, he leaves off his worship and he says, you criminal, he uses several insults, the enemy of God. He says, is it likely that you and someone like you would be righteous and Hussein, the son of the Prophet, would be filth?
Wallahi ma anta illa bahima.
You're nothing but a beast, but an animal.
La ta'qil ma ta'ti wa ma tadhar.
You're a beast who can't even think, who has no intellect.
فَأَبْشِرْ يَا عَدُوَ اللَّهِ بِالْخِزِي يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ.
The only thing awaiting you is disgrace on the Day of Judgment. وَالْعَذَابِ الْأَلِيمِ. And the punishment of Allah.
فَصَاحَ شِمْرِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ قَاتِلُكَ وَقَاتِلُ صَاحِبِكَ عَنْ قَرِيبِ.
So Shimr responds to Burair and says that Allah will, inshallah, kill you and kill your master very soon.
فَقَالَ بُرَيْرِ أَبِالْمَوْتِ تُخَوِّفُنِي.
You dare frighten me with death?
Wallahi inna al-mauta ma'abni rasulillahi ahabbu ilayya min al-hayati ma'akum.
He said, I prefer death with the messenger, the son of the messenger of God, to an eternal life with you.
Wallahi la nalat shafa'atu Muhammadin sallallahu alayhi wa alihi qawman araqu dima'a dhurriyatihi wa ahli baytih.
The intercession of the Prophet will never reach a people who has spilt the blood of his children. So a messenger comes out from Imam Hussein. He says,
Ya Burair, inna Aba Abdullah yaqulu laka irja ila mawdi'ik.
So Imam Hussein sends someone to call Burair back. He says, you've done your job. You've spoken well. You've spoken appropriately. But now come back. There's no point in speaking any further with these animals.
فَلَمَّا كَانَ وَقْتُ السَّحَرِ خفق الحسين برأسه خفقة خفقة ثم استيقظ فقال أتعلمون ما رأيت في منامي الساعة.
Close to Fajr time, just before Fajr, Imam Hussein falls asleep for an instant, and when he wakes up, he asks his companions and whoever's around him, do you know what I just saw in my dream?
قالوا فما رأيت يا ابن رسول الله.
What dream did you see?
قال رأيت كلابا قد شدت علي لتنهشني وفيها كلب أبقع رأيته كأشدها علي.
I saw these dogs who were all attacking me and biting me, and I saw one who was mottled with splotchy hair and diseased dog that was the worst of those dogs who was attacking me.
وأظن الذي يتولى قتلي رجل أبرز من هؤلاء القوم.
I think the interpretation of this dream is that the one who's going to kill me from these people is someone with a splotchy face, with some sort of a skin disease, and he has white spots on his face. Shimr had that disease.
ثُمَّ إِنِّي رَأَيْتُ بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ جَدِّي رَسُولَ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ وَسَلَّمَ وَمَعَهُ جَمَاعَةٌ مِّنْ أَصْحَابِهِ وَهُوَ يَقُولُ لِي.
Then I saw the Messenger of Allah, my grandfather, along with some of his companions, and the Prophet told me the following.
يَا بُنَيَّ أنت شهيد آل محمد.
You are the martyr of the family of Muhammad.
وقد استبشر بك أهل السماوات وأهل الصفيح الأعلى.
Everyone here, everyone in the skies and the heavens is awaiting your advent.
فَلْيَكُنْ إِفْطَارُكَ عِنْدِيَ اللَّيْلَ.
Inshallah, your last meal of this day of Ashura will be with me.
عَجِّلْ يَا بُنَيَّ وَلَا تَتَأَخَّرْ.
Come quickly, don't delay.
فَهَذَا مَلَكٌ نَزَلَ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ لِيَأْخُذَ دَمَكَ فِي قَارُورَةٍ خَضْرَاءِ.
And so the Prophet welcomes Imam Hussein and gives him tidings that he's going to be killed pretty soon.
Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. Stain up my sweet, they will bind both your feet, they will tear away your veil. They will come for Ali, they will curse him cause of me, they will torture him, you'll see. And we'll never be far from the pain of Ashura, from the pain of Ashura. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. They will curse Mustafa and my father Murtada, for they hate all that's good, all the good for which they stood from my mother did they steal, yet the truth Allah revealed. And we'll never be far from the pain of Fatima, from the pain of Fatima. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. Where the sand lies dry as hell, where the holy blood did spill, where the souls of martyrs dwell. My sweet Zainab, do not fear, no, Allah is always near, no, Allah all things does hear. And we'll never be far from the plain of Karbala, from the plain of Karbala. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. We shall face cursed Aziz, we shall face cursed Yazid. After all his evil deeds, you will preach what is right. In my face he will spit, to Allah we shall return. For this meeting do we yearn. And we'll never be far from the call of Allah, from the call of Allah. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. We will fight until the end, for this love we will defend, on Allah we will depend. For jihad is our way, from now till judgment day, and these words we shall pray. And we'll never be far from the path of Allah, from the path of Allah. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes.
Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light of my eyes. Love of my heart, you're the light of my eyes, Hussein, light.
Whoever could stand for someone else. Could stand for Ziyada, inshallah. And then we have a presentation.
Allahumma anta as-salam, wa minka as-salam, wa laka as-salam, wa ilayka.